recognize the collaborators on this project and the funding first, because sometimes at the end, you know, you're wrapping up and it's the last slide and it goes by real fast. So Sarita Fry and Mike Lehman, who are old graduate colleagues of mine, are co-investigators on this project funded by the USDA. And Selena Sabaloy from Argentina is a student who's been doing a lot of work on this. And Cheryl Makoviak was kind of an add-on at the after the project started, and we're doing a lot of work together in Florida. Okay, so just in general, I think everybody realizes this is the crowd and knows that soil is a very important ecological and economic resource, and it's also very complex, and trying to understand the complexity of that biology and the system requires development of new methods, and there's been a development of a lot of molecular methods. We developed an approach a long time ago now that was almost 20 years ago, based on trying to, since there's so many different microbes in the soil, if you try to, even if you could identify them all, then what would you have? You'd have this long list of organisms that'd be very difficult to try to make sense of. So what macroecologists do a lot is just don't worry about all the individual species name, but classify them in functional groups. And that was the original basis of community level physiological profiling, where you just, instead of trying to go through the isolation phase, just look at the whole community, describe the community as a fingerprint of their functional abilities. And the original, I think the concept is sound, the problem was the original method that we used to do that, the biolog plates, had some fundamental problems. Mainly is that it really provides a biased, limited view of the community because so few organisms in the original community of any kind of microbial community, but also particularly in soil, respond in those plates. They have to respond to very high substrate concentrations. The concentrations of the biolog plates are 3,000 or so grams per liter, very, very high. So you're only going to get copiotrophic organisms. You tend to do long incubation times, and there's a tetrazolium dye that has to be reduced, and that's toxic to some types of organisms, but other organisms don't take it up. You have to do the reaction at a buffered pH, so if you're using soils of different pH, that's a problem. So there was a number of problems with the method. So over the last few years, we've been looking at a different platform for doing the same basic approach, same microtiter plate, but instead of using the biolog plates, it's a plate that contains a at the bottom of the plate, there's a gel layer that contains an oxygen-sensitive fluorophore. And when you inoculate your suspension above that, can be any kind of suspension. In this case, we're going to talk about soil suspensions. As these the communities respire oxygen, what happens is this fluorophore begins to fluoresce because its fluorescence is quenched by oxygen. So what you tend to get is over incubation time, if you add, let's say, 50 ppm of substrate, you get this response, fluorescence occurs as the oxygen is consumed, and then it declines as the plate is re-aerated and oxygen consumption decreases. And then if you add a lot of substrate, you get this large response and then it drops back down. Now the advantages of this approach are that you can use much lower substrate concentrations. There you're looking at 50 ppm or 500 ppm as opposed to, like I said, 3,000 ppm in the biolog plates. You can also, you don't have to worry about extracting the microbes from the soil. You can use the soil suspension, very heavy suspensions, directly into the plates because what you're reading, the plate is from the bottom where the fluorescence is. So you don't have to worry about any kind of background color issues, absorbance due to trying to read through the liquid. And there's no unknown proprietary ingredients. I used to like to call it, trying to work with the biolog plates, they changed their formulation at one point and we did some work and it changed their responses and we used to call it, you know, what is the magic dust that's in the plates? You know, you didn't know what it was. So that makes it very complicated. And not only does it make it complicated, it limits your assay conditions. You know, you have to do it under certain conditions. In this case, you can manipulate whatever you want to manipulate, pH, nutrient levels, whatever. There's no media in the plates other than what you add. The only thing that is in the plate is that gel layer in the bottom with the fluorophore. So we received funding from USDA to look at kind of optimizing and validating this approach. So our real objective here is to try to give the soil microbiological community an understanding of what this assay can do and what it can't do. And quite frankly, we didn't do that the first time around, and I apologize to everybody for that. You know, I was a grad student, and, you know, my professor was saying, publish this. So we did, you know, and it's worked out well, but, I mean, it would have been better to try to figure out what all the limitations are at first. So that's what we're trying to do now. And specifically, we have five areas we're trying to look at. One is improving the sensitivity assay. See how low we can go. How little substrate can you amend with and still get a response? We're trying to minimize the effects of sample processing. Can you actually, is making a soil suspension, how much does that affect the signal? And actually try to validate it in the field, look at trying to compare to field conditions in, where we're manipulating in-situ substrate availability, see if we see sensible changes in the biolog profile. Also, we're looking at seeing how much nitrogen limitation in the plate assay can be an indication of nitrogen limitation in the field. And finally, we're looking at trying to distinguish fungal and bacterial contribution to the signal. Because here again, with the redox, old redox technology, you really were limited to looking at bacteria, not fungi. Here it's just anything that's consuming oxygen. So we're looking at cyclohexamide addition, trying to see the contribution of fungi. Now that fifth bullet is one I'm not going to talk about today. I'm going to give you kind of an overview of the current status of the first four, and this is all relatively preliminary work because we've gotten started relatively recently. So in terms of improving the sensitivity of the assay, the graph I showed you earlier, we'd done a lot of work at 50 to 100 ppm, and we had published some of that. But we want to look at, could you go below 50, and could you actually look at endogenous respiration, don't add any substrate, and see what kind of response you can get. And we, our approach to that was to try to increase the signal by introducing larger volumes in the well, maximizing the volume, and that would thereby decrease diffusion in the well and also increase the overall consumption of oxygen within the well, and then also seal the well to prevent oxygen from permeating, diffusing back into the well. Because like you noticed, it's a reversible reaction, right? I mean, that dye, as oxygen consumes, it fluoresces, and then as re-aeration occurs, the fluorescence is removed. So our basic methodology is really simple, straightforward. Like I said, there's no extraction. We take aqueous slurries. We typically shake 5 grams or 10 grams for 25 mils of DI water. It really depends on what you can pipette. And our approach is try to get as thick a slurry as possible to be able to pipette it into the plates. And those are typically, we use a little bit less with some organic layers because you'll get a particulate matter that plugs the pipetters. And then we looked at, we add different stocks. We'll add our soil slurry and then add different stock solutions containing the carbon source or the nitrogen amendment or cyclohexamide. Or if you want to do kill controls, you can add formalin. So those, but it's real straightforward. You can inoculate a plate in a very short period of time, and that's clearly one of the strengths. Now here's some data from our initial optimization study. So what you're looking at here is this organic layer from a forest soil. It's from Harvard Forest. This is some of the work from our collaborator, Sir DeFry. And you're looking at soil supplemented with 100 ppm, 50 ppm, 10 ppm, or no supplement. And looking at the respiration, this is the incubation time, and this is normalized relative fluorescence units. So it's normalized to a point about, what we use is typically some point 30 minutes or an hour into the assay. And the reason why we do that is you'll notice early on here, you'll see a slight a dip in fluorescence. So we use this point as a reference, and then it comes up. And that's all based on temperature fluctuation, small-scale temperature fluctuations, because the fluorescence is temperature sensitive. Now the reason why the temperature changes is what our plate reader, it's a constant incubation temperature, but the temperature of the solutions that you make up and you put in the plate and put into the reader right away takes a second, few minutes for it to equilibrate. But in any event, okay, so what you're looking at is in each one of these graphs, the red lines are the large volumes and the black lines are the small volumes, 240 microliters in the plates or 150 microliters. And then the open symbols are the covered wells that we actually put an impermeable layer on the top. And what you can see here is that if you notice the scales, this is 8 NRFU, 2, 1.3, 1.2. So clearly, the less substrate you add, the less response you get. But the key is you can you definitely get more response in the red lines when you add more volume to the wells. And you'll notice here that even when you're adding 10 ppm, if you add the large volume, you actually get a detectable response about 1.2 to 1.25, which is greater than the unsupplemented. This is the same sample. It's unsupplemented. So I guess the take-home message here is that if you add more, the larger volume, you can get higher sensitivity, and you can look at detection levels around 10 ppm And you can actually look at the response, the endogenous respiration, this response here. Now, if we do killed controls with add formalin, they're just straight across. There's no fluorescence. So this is a real response. This is the endogenous respiration of the soil. And what you'll notice is when you cover the cell, when you cover the plates, the tail just tends to be extended out. That's because there's less diffusion back into the plate. So the oxygen, you still get oxygen diffusing back into that the well, but it's not as fast. So our standard methodology now is we do 240 microliters total volume, and we seal the tops of the plates, and in that way we can, if you're interested in, you can look at low substrate additions. This is the same kind of slide, graph layout. This is just instead of the organic layer, it's the mineral layer from that same soil, forest soil, and you'll see that the big difference is while you still can see some background response, it's less. This is 1.05 as opposed to 1.1 in the other slide. And what that, again, that means is normalized relative fluorescence units. So 1.05 means that the fluorescence increased by 5% from the reference level. Okay, so where we're at in terms of optimization is that, you know, we can detect amendments as low as 10 ppm. And what we're doing right now is looking at what grows up in the, what responds in the wells, using molecular techniques to actually ask the question, okay, if you can add less substrate, do you actually then, are you able to have less selective enrichment? So we're going to compare the signal of the original community inoculum to what grows up in the wells and look at what responds under different amendment levels. And then the background respiration, it's clearly detectable, and what we're in the process of doing now is looking at the relationship between that response and the B-deoxyplates and independent measures of either labile organic matter or soil respiration based on CO2 evolution, because it may be a way to more rapidly do that. Okay, so the second area that I was going to mention was trying to quantify the effects of sample processing. If you make this soil slurry, there's no way around making the soil slurry necessarily if you're going to use this assay. But if you, for some experimental purposes, we've gotten some larger well plates, 24 well plates, which you can actually fit a micro soil bag into. So what we're in the process of doing, and this is in collaboration with Mike Lehman from the USDA, out of South Dakota, is he's made these, Mike's a fisherman, so he immediately when we talked about this, he said, I could make these small bags out of some spawn bags, you know, that you make for fishing. You put salmon eggs in there or something for fishing. So he tied up all these little bags and incubated them in the field, and you see these little, he's got the flags, they're attached to wire. And what we're in the process of doing is taking those out of the soil and looking at disrupting the material, taking it out of the bag and disrupting it, putting the wells versus incubating the well or that bag intact. And preliminary work, this is with no amendment at all. He's seen real no difference between the disrupted samples and the undisrupted samples. But he's really just in the process of getting into that data, and actually he's going to try to analyze some more of these bags that have been incubating before the soil freezes up in South Dakota. The third area that we're looking at is trying to actually compare it to in situ substrate availability. We had done some original work, and this is work that's been published in Applied Environmental Micro, where we were looking with hydroponic systems, where we were dosing with different kinds of surfactants. This is sodium lauryl sulfate. This is a amphoteric surfactant, and we had systems where weren't exposed to any of these surfactants, or were exposed to either this surfactant or this surfactant, then we took rhizosphere samples from those systems and exposed them to those substrates in the B-deoxy plate. And what we found is that in the system that was exposed to SLES, it gave a much more rapid and early response to SLES, so which makes you think that the functional response in the B-deoxy plate actually reflected the in situ substrate use. And then we also saw the same thing here with the CAPB. I'm sorry for that kind of weak line, but that treatment also responded earlier. So this was encouraging to us because we've tried that same kind of study with the biolog technique a number of times, and we could never get that response. You know, so what we always told people with the biolog is, well, it gives you a pattern, but it has no functional relevance. Whereas this one looked like it did. So what we're in the process of doing is in collaboration with Mike Lehman out in South Dakota. He's amending soils with the study just completed with case amino acids and glucose, and then we're looking at the soil response of the soils in the B-deoxy plates to those different amendments. And again, this is data that he just collected, and we haven't really gone through it all, but the basic study is that we applied these different mixtures at 0, 7, 14, 21, and 28 days, and then looked at them at those times. So, got 1 minute left. This still says 9:45. This is not moving. I figured I was in some kind of time warp. In terms of nitrogen, just to mention that, I mean, if you, these are laboratory microcosms where if they're either unamended or amended, you can look at the response with nitrogen, or with, this is with nitrogen, without nitrogen. In soils that weren't amended during the incubation with any nitrogen, they actually look nitrogen starved. All right, so here's the response with nitrogen. So if you add nitrogen, you get a better response. Over the time course, it stays that way. When you amend the soils, actually fertilize the soils, at day one after that fertilization, you do the biodiversity plate, you see no difference between with and without nitrogen, which it makes sense because there's nitrogen available in the soil. With time, though, you get signal of nitrogen starvation. So we're in the process of looking at that in the field with Cheryl, looking at post-fertilization events. And then just to summarize, quote from Mark Twain, this is good, I find this is good, good advice. Always acknowledge a fault because it tends to throw those in authority off their guard and allow you the opportunity to commit more, and that's in the, what we're in the process of doing now. And we've got several lines of method validation of this technique are underway, and we really are open to collaborative efforts. If people are doing work with soils where they're doing other types of analysis as part of manipulative experiments, given the simplicity of doing this analysis, we're more than welcome to try to do this work as part of existing studies to help, again, validate what it's really telling us.